Good evening and welcome to Stockwatch this Friday. I'm Alicia Seckham and joining me via Zoom is Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Zwelakhe Mnguni from Benguela Global Fund Managers as well. Welcome to you both and thanks so much for joining us this evening. So, it was hard to get away from the inflation theme this week. Prints and data showing the rising trend, whether you were looking at the US, UK, China, to a degree South Africa, it had the market squarely focused on the prospect of tighter monetary policy from here on out. Well, our Saab tightened things a bit locally, a 25 basis point hike coming through, and amidst it all, Nick Kunze choosing Standard Bank.
Inflation coming, rising interest rates. What do you want to own in that sort of environment going into 2022? Well, you want to own financials. And financials have certainly lagged our sector. Very difficult to look at the JSE All Share up almost 18% year to date. Our banks, like Standard Bank, are not even in double digits. So they need to play a little bit of catch up. They tend to lead markets up, and I think going into next year, be exposed to the financials and Standard Bank would be our preference of choice.
Zwelakhe, how much catch-up do you see coming to the fore, and I guess more pertinent, just how quickly?
Look, I think it's very difficult to speculate how much catch-up, but certainly our banks are looking relatively attractive, both relative to the local stocks, but also relative to global banks. So there's certainly quite a lot of potential that could still come through. I mean, our banking margins or the net interest margins in South Africa are quite high. I think we're sitting at about 3.8%. So there's definitely scope for banks to do well. But longer term, yeah, I mean, it's difficult. You need growth in the economy to basically create demand for banking products like loans.
Yeah, and that's the catch-22, right? Because you've got income, interest income, Gary, to consider on the one hand, but then whether those lenders are going to be able to satisfy their debt obligations, another thing to consider altogether.
No, absolutely. You know, I let's put it this way. I really like the idea that Nick's put forward. So, you know, I think we're moving into a high interest rate environment, into a high inflation environment. A lot of the typical growth stocks that we've seen do so well over the last 10 years, I think are going to get into a little bit of trouble. And I think Nick's 100% right that banking is probably where you want to look in a rising interest rate environment. Now, looking at South Africa specifically, there's always been a little bit of a disconnect between our interest rates and necessarily the ability that we have to grow the economy. So, you know, will slightly higher interest rates really stifle growth in South Africa? Is the, you know, is our private sector so focused on the weighted average cost of capital that it's going to crush our businesses? I don't think so. But if you look at the South African corporate sector specifically, I think, you know, we have very conservatively run businesses because they face such a risky environment. So I think we'll be maybe a little bit more resilient to rising interest rates from a growth point of view. I mean, our growth problems don't come from high interest rates. They come from, you know, structural issues within
Absolutely.
The economy. So I think, you know, I think Nick's spot on there, you know, much cheaper, and as Zwelakhe mentioned as well, a lot cheaper than many of the international banks. And I think, you know, from a sectoral point of view, a good pick going into the next couple of years if we see inflation staying high.
Well, we've been talking very broad strokes here. Zwelakhe, Standard Bank specifically within that banking cluster, is it your preferred pick?
No, certainly it is. We hold it and we like it. I think with a bit of flavor from Africa, they might be able to maintain slightly above average growth compared to the SA loan growth in at the moment.
Yeah, okay. So an eye on Standard Bank within that complex, but the financial sector as a whole certainly triggering some appeal on the local corporate earnings scene in the meantime. Transaction Capital still with its foot on the accelerator. The company delivered a 27% increase in headline earnings in the year to September after trading at its We Buy Cars and Transaction Capital Risk Services surpassed pre-COVID 2019 levels. Tami Netta likes it.
I think what we've seen from CMH with the automobile market and their access to WeBuyCars gives them a great growth vehicle in that. I think their taxi and risk businesses are going to continue to do well. So my view is they've broadened their market reach. They've gone into an area part of the economy that's gonna grow over time, largely because of the COVID deficit. So transaction capital.
So financier of a different kind that we're looking at here, Gary, do you like transaction capital, bearing in mind that you've got the financing arm on the one hand, but then you've got the debt collecting arm, muscling on the other?
Yes, I mean, I don't cover the stock formally because it doesn't sit in our local portfolios, but everything I've followed on the company over the years shows these guys to be very, very savvy operators. You look at the We Buy Cars business, and that looks incredibly robust. It's in the right sector, especially if you consider what's happening in the used car market at the moment. Just with the chip shortages internationally, just not getting the new car volumes through. Also, obviously, just new car prices maybe a little bit steep for some customers. They're looking at, as you say, at the financing business. I mean, they're using all sorts of things like AI to collect their debts. And again, it seems like a very well run, very well managed business. So yes, I do tend to like it, but I don't formally cover it, so I'd be nervous to give you a price tag.
Okay, well, Zwelakhe, I caught up with the CEO, David Howitz, earlier this week, and I said to him exactly what Gary said. It's very fortuitous, the timing of this We Buy Cars transaction, because they've got a host of factors that are providing some kind of tailwind. I mean, the set of numbers they released are not even having seen the We Buy Cars effect fully filtered through. What are you anticipating as far as the where to from here is concerned?
Certainly, the numbers will probably continue to improve. I think the We Buy Cars transaction was fantastic because they seem to be playing in areas where they have a lot less competition. I mean, the taxi industry and this market as well of the vehicle resale. I mean, certainly niche markets that enable them to extract better value than their peers. But I do like it, but the price is quite high. I mean, I think it's trading at about 3x book, and I think you'd need quite a high ROE or very high sustained growth to basically justify that price. But it's a very good quality business. It's well run.
Yeah. Okay. There seems to be some consensus on that one. While we had transaction capital rearing, Vodacom dialed up over 6 million new subscribers, but with a focus on fintech as its next growth driver. Imtiaz Suleman says he would pick Vodacom right now.
They've done two deals recently to bolster their portfolio. The one is the purchase of Vodafone Egypt from the parent company Vodafone. That gives them another geography to grow in. It's a very fast growing market, lots of opportunity to introduce their mobile money operation into Egypt. And then the second one has been the fiber acquisition and being a shareholder in the CIVH fiber business, which has also been growing very fast. So I think they've segmented their portfolio very nicely. They've increased the growth profile of the company. They're still paying out 75% of their earnings in terms of dividends. And it's trading at a 12 PE, so I think Vodacom looks very attractive at these levels.
Gary, I don't think we had Shamil Joosub very happy with me earlier this week, because I said to him, we know that telcos players have become utility companies. We expect utility companies to be boring, but we don't expect them to be this boring. And he was like, he's been called anything but boring. How do you feel? And how excited are you by the numbers that were presented this week?
Yeah, so that's interesting, because I always took a different tack with him earlier this week as well. So I was on a show where he was just following me, and I got asked about those Vodacom numbers, and I said the opposite of boring. I said I was really worried about the execution risk that they were facing as they changed the business from, as you said, a very stable dividend play, almost utility-esque telco play, into an exciting financial services business that's now operating in Egypt and Kenya and all over the African continent. And I just said I think that they should be a little bit careful given the difficulty that MTN has had executing in some some different jurisdictions. And just kind of pointed out to investors that this is a business that's not only changing the territories they operate in, but they're also changing the products that they're selling, in that they're really looking at the especially in that Egyptian transaction, transaction, trying to execute to 18 million unbanked Egyptians. Yeah. So I don't think he was too happy with me after I also made that statement. But you know, for me, it's difficult. Yes, you know, it's a business in flux at the moment. It can either go very, very right, or it could go very, very wrong. At the moment, the group revenue numbers only up 4.2%, so not particularly exciting. Great, we've got a dividend of 4.20. I don't know if you got that number from Elon Musk, you know, paying dividends at 4.20. But yeah, customer growth, great. But I mean, the customer growth is coming from acquisitions, not necessarily solid new products and services. So yeah, a little bit cautious around the company at the moment. My preferred has always been MTN and Telkom. And I'm not quite convinced to switch into Vodacom just yet.
Okay, how convinced are you, Zwelakhe? I mean, are you skeptical about how it's pursuing growth from here on out, or are you excited by it?
Look, I'd probably say I'm a bit concerned a little, in the sense that the business seems to be a piggy bank for Vodafone. So they basically keep selling their businesses into Vodacom and basically taking the cash and probably paying down their debt in the UK. But I do think that the strategy to get a bigger footprint, I mean, we will remember that they were actually, Vodafone is the one that actually helped Vodacom back from competing with them in Africa. And now they are actually getting maximum valuation for holding Vodacom back. I feel a bit uneasy about that. But on the business operations, I mean, they're doing very well at the moment, but can they sustain that momentum in multiple geographies with a product change as well? So they try and push hard on fintech, and actually they were amongst the earliest fintech players in with M-Pesa, but they basically got left behind and other players took advantage of the situation. So certainly promising, but I'm not so excited. I don't know. I think there's a bit of execution risk that is embedded here.
We'll have to wait and see. In the meantime, Zwelakhe, just very quickly, what would your preferred pick be, MTN versus Telkom versus Vodacom?
I'd take MTN any day.
MTN any day, as simple as that. Okay, let's take a look at Prosus. Its trading update for the half-year period showed headline earnings per share expected to have moved anywhere between 0% and -7% in the first half 2022. Still, Alex Day says Prosus is his pick.
If you look at the amount of investment they're putting into the business, the number of staff they're hiring, and actual investing costs in the business, margins are eroding at the moment, as well as advertising businesses, perhaps, but more on a cyclical low end as well. I think there is room for recovery there. Obviously, very good prospects in its fintech business as well as a gaming business continues to do well. I mean, all the negative sentiment that's been happening and all the regulatory risks happening in China. We look at evaluation, exclude the associates, which is very material. It's trading about a 4P of about 14. That is 10 cents. So I just think it's too enticing, and as a result, Prosus being at quite a good discount to Tencent, plus other parts of Prosus looking attractive. Yeah. I think if you are looking for a long-term entry point, this is time to buy now.
Do you agree, Gary? Is the time to buy Prosus now?
Timing's always difficult, but yes, I would be buying Prosus now. I think. I think it's I've also said it before. We've been a fan for a long time. I think with the regulatory changes in China, you know, there's a lot of obviously risk to the business as well. But you know, I think most of that is already factored into the share price. So yeah, I would be a buyer of Prosus at these levels. You know, we know that you know any change from the Chinese regulators, any change of tone from Beijing, and suddenly you can get Chinese markets up 50-100% in a matter of months. So you know, with obviously the big stake in Tencent underneath, that's going to drive the share price. And yeah, I don't know. I was looking at Alibaba's Singles Day figures. I mean, you know, operationally, these Chinese businesses are just absolutely excellent. And it really is the regulators there that are holding back the valuation. So, yeah, I would say, yes, it's more speculative than going and buying into a retailer like Amazon overseas or something like eBay or, you know, picking up some Activision Blizzard or some EA in the US markets. But at the same time, it's a little bit more speculative, but the valuation is very, very attractive. And if regulatory risk simmers down a little bit, I think you could be in for very, very decent gains.
To what extent, Zwelakhe, are you being enticed?
Well, certainly it looks quite attractive at the current levels. The only concern I have is that they continue to make acquisitions, and basically some of these acquisitions seem to be an attempt to paper over some of the early acquisitions that were made and that are not delivering to the expectations. And basically, you make another acquisition, you bolt on, and the thing looks like it's making progress. And they spend quite a lot of money in these acquisitions, and it's like a lottery almost. So they might hit it lucky in one company that they sell and make big money. But operationally, I am a bit worried. I mean, the operations are doing well, but if you look at the cash flows get gobbled up by continuous investment. So, yeah, I mean, they try to fund growth, fantastic. But the Tencent underpin, I think, with the regulatory risks, I think the regulatory risks are probably in the price. I think there was a time when Tencent was very a big component, but now I think we are seeing that the risk is priced in from a regulated point of view.
Life Healthcare amongst the companies to have released results this week, and here recovery coming through on account to a large extent of its diversification and international exposure in particular. But Merrill Pick prefers Netcare.
I think as we're coming out, as vaccinations are rolling out, I am picking Netcare today. Very much almost a pure play on South African hospitals at this stage. We should see pent-up demand for elective surgeries. They've got a robust balance sheet. Occupancies should be recovering from here. And this is not really part of the base case, but I have a theory that we've spent so much time in a sterile bubble that things like the flu and those sort of respiratory diseases might just surprise us on the downside as patients, but on the upside as hospitals.
Zwelakhe, what do you make of that theory that Merrill Pick is putting up? Do you see a pent-up demand starting to suddenly unleash itself?
Unfortunately, you can't have pent-up demand here. It's incidence, it's occurrences, rather than a build-up of demand. So certainly, the numbers have been badly affected by COVID-19, the delay or postponement of elective surgery, and that is a worldwide phenomenon. But we are starting to see some of those delays being scaled back, and they're starting to operate again. So I do think that there is a potential for recovery, but I'm not so clear about the strategy, the long-term strategy. How do they get back into environment where their growth is back on track? I mean, the big GHG in the UK has blown them out of the water, and I don't think they will get back to that momentum. So I certainly think that it is probably attractive, but long-term, the strategy is still a big question mark.
Yeah. Gary, that's exactly why I highlighted a player like Life Healthcare and what it put on the table this week, right? Because you're looking at diversification and that international strategy, its UK arm, paying off and cushioning it nicely. And you stack it up against something that's almost a pure play in South African hospitals at this stage, and that Netcare. And one wonders, you know, what steals more of your attention right now?
What steals more of my I don't know. You know, I looked at those Life Healthcare results as well. And as you say, the international businesses are doing very well. But, you know, the kind of general moves that we've seen, you know, like from the likes of MediClinic as well, is that COVID has put a lot of the hospital groups under pressure because of the cancellation of elective surgeries. But then listening to the Life Healthcare CEO, they said, oh, no, but, you know, we've actually been a net beneficiary of COVID just because of the structure of our business. Yes, we faced a couple of costs, but the elective surgery is not as important to them. And you kind of pointed to the theater minutes, which are still down from the 2019 numbers. But, you know, recovering very, very quickly. So, you know, looking at Netcare, Life Healthcare, and MediClinic, you know, these businesses do seem to have struggled through the pandemic, and it does seem to be coming back. So I think the thesis that, you know, I don't know if us living in a bubble is going to make us more fluey, but I think the thesis that as the world maybe gets back to normal and these hospitals have adapted to, you know, working with COVID patients and as the elective surgeries do open up, I think, you know, whether it's international or locally, I think you will see an increased demand, and that will will hopefully flow through into the revenue and earnings numbers.
Yeah.
So, I think also timing, I think is probably good to get into the healthcare sector.
Okay, well, let's juxtapose two further stocks. First, Wayne McCurry saying, why not go for something like good old-fashioned Home Depot?
I know the shares up strongly on the release of their results, but these were extremely good results. They got turnover up strongly. There's a revival in the US DIY market now that timber prices have come down quite a bit. Profits were up 20-odd%. Really good set of results. And we know that the US consumer is doing well. So I think Home Depot, the rating of the share isn't that high. So why not? You know, it's a good old-fashioned retailer. But why not? It seems reasonable.
Reasonable in your book, Zuelake, and how confident are you in the health of that U.S. consumer? It certainly has been proving to be healthy enough to, fuel these inflation concerns, to fuel the fact that we may well see the hiking of rates come to the fore sooner rather than later. Where are your, expectations sitting?
I mean, I do think that Home Depot has been a major beneficiary of the stay-at-home cycle, and the numbers that are coming now, I mean, are after the fact. Basically, that is the past, and I think we've seen probably the peak in that market, because as people go back into work environments, you know, that market would deflate a bit. And certainly, from the statistical numbers that are published by the U.S. Statistics Department. Basically, there appears to be some form of deceleration in the home improvement segment of the numbers. So I think that we've seen a good number. The company has done very well. I think it's up over 50%. Yeah. It's not a kind of company that one can classify as a growth that can deliver such high consistent growth. So I think it's fully priced at the moment.
Okay, on your side, Gary, your view on sustainability of the trend that markets seem to be liking for now?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, one, you're betting on the U.S. consumer, and you know, if you look at the retail sales numbers that came out recently, and Home Depot is, yes, it's a DIY retailer. It's, you know, you can think of it like our builder's warehouse, but you know, if you look at just how strong the U.S. consumer is at the moment. I don't know if I'd bet on a different continent's consumers rather than U.S. consumers. They seem so strong. You know, if you look at Home Depot's numbers, I mean, absolutely outstanding. I take Sue Alaki's point that some of this is a legacy of projects that have been done over the COVID period. You know, you've been improving your house because you haven't been able to travel, so you stick that money into your home office instead. But listening to the what the executives were saying to analysts on the call, they say that there's still a lot of momentum. And of course, they talk in their book, but they say their consumers are still halfway through these projects. You know, a lot of these things have been undertaken, and they're still going to require a lot more materials than that. So, you know, it was such a solid beat. And yes, Home Depot has been a beneficiary of COVID, but I mean, Home Depot was a great business long before that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've held Home Depot in our portfolios for over 5 years now. And I mean, it's been a fantastic earner. Well managed, and it's a great way to get exposure to that U.S. consumer.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at what's happening in the U.S. labor market at the moment, I do not believe you're going to see the U.S. consumer fall over in the short term. And for me, that's why I would still hold
Home Depot. Underlining what Wayne highlighted, right? Good old-fashioned retailer. But what I want to juxtapose it against is Jean-Pierre's pick this week, because he took us to a different reality. And while it may be good, there's nothing old-fashioned about Meta Platforms.
What is going to be very interesting the next few years is as they spend a lot of money on the Metaverse. That's why they changed their name and focus on Oculus and the development of these goggles, whether it's virtual reality or augmented reality.
Yep.
That seems to be very exciting. They're going to spend a lot of money on there. Mark Zuckerberg has said that's going to be his focus. The share price is not that expensive relative to other big tech companies that sit in the US. So Meta Platforms is my stock pick tonight.
Zuelake, I want to just focus on that valuation. On a valuation basis, does this make sense for you?
Yeah, relatively attractive compared to other tech companies. Certainly, they are under a lot of pressure from the regulatory front on the privacy issues. But I do think that the big growth factor here remains their advertising that is coming from where people are moving advertising from mainstream like TV and radio, and they're starting to move those into digital platforms. And certainly, they are one of the digital platforms that have shown great success and good return on investment. So certainly, a stock that I think one has to keep in the portfolio. I mean, the Oculus is probably a long shot that it's, it will deliver maybe in the long term, but it's probably like what gaming is to Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, Gary, all you have to do is one conversation near your phone or your PC, and all of a sudden your timeline's advertising everything you were talking about, right? So how do you feel about it?
About the new meta platforms, you know, it's one of those big tech stocks. We have previously held back when it was called Facebook. We cut it on the back of data security concerns and regulatory concerns after the Cambridge Analytica issue. And really because, you know, as well, like you pointed out, so much of the revenue of this business is reliant on advertising. And, you know, yes, if you don't have Google, by all means, buy Meta platforms. But we have Google, which is also reliant on advertising. So we believe that Google will be, or at least Alphabet will be a better play than Meta platforms. I wish they'd just keep their names the same. looking at the Oculus idea, you know, is Oculus going to be the next big growth driver? I'm concerned with that thesis. One, you look at what happened to 3D TVs, let's say, it became almost a novelty item. Yes, are we going to move into a truly augmented reality world? Or is it just essentially a gimmick that it's great to go and buy and use, but people aren't going to consume it in mass? It's very difficult to say at this stage. And what you're doing is you're pricing in a lot of future earnings into the company that haven't yet proven themselves. Is Oculus really going to become the future?
Yeah.
I remember talking about this 10 years ago when Facebook bought out 360 degree videos and what they were supposed to do. We're 10 years on and nothing has really changed. So I'm a little bit concerned around that, especially what back to Nkunzi's point at the beginning. We're going into a high inflation environment, which means you want to hold stocks that are delivering earnings for you today rather than go and pay up for earnings that might be delivered in future. So
and
for me, yes, yeah, it's one of the big tech stocks. You can hold it if you don't hold Google, but for us, not an upper firm.
Exactly, especially where that might is a very big might. Let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. Have a fabulous weekend. Of course, Gary and Zwelakhe with us today, wrapping up the week that was. Well, with that, we've come to the end of this week's Stockwatch. We'll see you again, same time, same place, next week.